Hello and welcome to another edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Bubba, today, as you are folks out there consuming this, watching or listening, it is very topical this week. What's going on with the debt with our government and the vote that has just come in on debt relief, it has left us a little perplexed because there people kind of all over the road on the votes on this.
Yeah, a lot of people that you support and you follow them and what they do, and we've got them all over the road on this issue. So we're trying to find the truth.
Well, when you're looking for the truth, there's no better resource than Representative Gary Palmer. Gary is a friend of the show. He has served our country well and represented our state well. He was right on the forefront of this, and Gary Palmer, welcome to Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, or welcome back.
When this is over, do I get a degree?
You get a degree in common sense. I think you already have one, and that's the reason why, as someone who has not exhaustively looked at this the way you have for a long time, and I see that this package and this deal that the speaker said, let's move forward on it, I see you voted no.
Yeah, what I would want to get across to people is there are a lot of people out there thinking this is a massive loss for the Republicans. It isn't. This is far better than a clean debt limit bill.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I voted no is I felt like it's a big missed opportunity, particularly on work requirements. And my attitude going into these big votes, these controversial votes, is to try to find a way to get to yes. But I'm also very transparent, and when we had our leadership meeting, I'm part of leadership. I'm the only one in leadership that voted no. So I understand the consequences of voting no, but I felt strongly enough to bring this up in our leadership meeting on Tuesday that I had a problem with the bill. And I did it, like I say, everything I could to try to get to yes, but at the end of the day, I couldn't because I felt like that we were missing some enormous opportunities. But at the end of the day, all said and done, when you just look at the permitting reform that we got in the bill, I think that justified a lot of the people voting for it. And what I want to try to do with this is to use this to try to regenerate the momentum that we had going into the farm bill and then to the appropriations process. And particularly on the work requirement side, because that's a no-brainer, guys. I mean, if we were to go out anywhere in the country today and say we're at almost $32 trillion in debt, enormous interest payments, does it make sense to ask the American taxpayer to borrow more money, pay more interest, to pay people who are able-bodied without dependent children not to work? I think we're going to win that debate every time.
Congressman, let me ask you this, because back to kind of how we frame this to begin with, and we're just going to talk about our state for a minute because we're more familiar with some of these representatives personally. Dale Strong, you, Barry Moore, voted no. Mike Rogers, Jerry Carl, who my daughter works for, we've had on the show, Robert Adaholt, and Terry Sewell, who is the Democrat, voted yes. It's very rare that we see you, Robert Adaholt, Jerry Carl, Mike Rogers, all on opposite sides of things. So that's what was a little confusing to everybody. We were like, what did you see that they didn't? Because we had Jerry Carl's statement here today. He hailed the bill as the largest deficit reduction and spending cut Congress has ever voted on. Is that true?
Yeah, but it's a low bar. But that is an accurate statement, but here's how you have to look at some of these votes: is what the individual priorities are. Mike Rogers, for instance, is the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and we cannot go into a default, and we wouldn't have gone into a default. What we would have done is start scaling back on spending, and I don't think we would have scaled back defense, but we wouldn't have increased it either. And so I think Mike, he's looking at it from the perspective of our national security and what we're being confronted with China. And there's stuff, obviously, that we can't talk about that these guys know. So when you look at these individual votes, what I focused in on was like the work requirements. I focused in on some the more technical aspects of it, like the administrative paygo. What that means is we had a provision in there that if the administration wanted to increase spending in a certain area, they had to reduce it somewhere else. But we allowed them to have waivers on that, and we took away judicial review, which I introduced two amendments Tuesday night, one of which would have fixed the work requirements deal, and the other was to restore judicial review under the PAYGO. And none of them were made in order, and I understood that they wouldn't be. But I had to at least make that attempt to kind of lay down a marker for where I was.
Now, the work requirement was something the Republicans wanted going in, but that was done away with in the negotiations. Actually, that was something that the Republicans or the Speaker gave on, right?
No. What happened with the work requirements is that the Democrats drew, that was their red line. And for me, I would have said, I accept that challenge. And I would have been going out, and particularly on the Senate side, there's 8 Senate seats that are likely to flip. 7 of them are Democrat, and the other is the independent, Kyrsten Sinema. I would have been going into their states, running ads, doing press conferences, going on radio like with you guys, talking about the very thing I just said a few minutes ago, that does it make sense to borrow more money to pay people not to work?
Right.
Who are able-bodied. Yeah. And I think we would have won that every time. What we wound up with was work requirements, and it gets technical because the states are allowed a certain number of waivers. And, mm-hmm. and up until 2018, it was 15% of the eligible population, eligible meaning eligible to go to work, get a waiver. Makes no sense to me.
Right.
But they lowered it from 15 to 12. And then in this bill, they lowered it from 12 to 8. And what was happening was with the 12% waivers, they were aggregating those. In other words, they'd do 12% this year, and then the remaining group, they'd do 12% next year. So it got to the point where there's 17 states that everybody had a waiver, mm-hmm. 100%. The 8% would have been in any given year. You know, you're not going to have more than 8%. But what they did was they added the homeless people, got a waiver, veterans got a waiver, and kids in foster home, growing up in foster homes, got a waiver after they aged out of the foster home up to age 24. That actually increased the number of people eligible for a waiver and increased the number, actually would have increased our spending, or it would have at best been a wash. So that's what I was trying to fix. And then when I mentioned waivers for veterans, I think you guys will appreciate this coming from your faith perspective that you have, that we want what's best for people.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say the waivers for veterans and for homeless would be a waiver if you're getting treatment for substance abuse or for PTSD. But we're allowing people to live on the streets and get food stamp cards that in many cases, as one of my former think tank colleagues pointed out, they're trading for drugs. This doesn't help them.
No.
This doesn't help people regain their self-respect, their independence, their self-sufficiency, and that was my problem with it.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Well, you know, I guess with any of these things, you can say, well, this is a good cause or that's a good cause. There's always somebody that's got some situation. But when you are $32 trillion in debt, how do we keep drawing the line to help people when we can't help ourselves? You know, and if these numbers are correct, the national debt is projected to be $51 trillion in 10 years, in 2033. I mean, we are bleeding to death.
Yeah.
How do we stop it? Because no one wants to cut out veterans. No one wants to cut out foster kids. Everybody's got a cause. There's a wheelchair in every corner. How do we ever say, no, we can't do this?
Well, we're not cutting out veterans. We're not cutting out people who truly need help. That's the thing. It's the people that I was asked, well, what would you have done? I said, I would have just reversed all of the Obama and Biden waivers on the 1996 Welfare Reform Act. That was passed, and Joe Biden voted for it. as a senator in 1996. Clinton signed it. But even the Brookings Institute, which initially said this was a disaster, there'd be people starving in the streets, said it's one of the it's one of the most successful programs ever passed by Congress. We should have just gone back to that, reversed those waivers, and again gone out and sold it. You have to sell this. But I want to say this about people who voted for it, and again, these are very complex issues. And as Rick, you pointed out, I ran a think tank. Yeah. For almost for 20 something years.
That's how we first met you.
So I'm up. I mean, I'm deep in the weeds on this, and but not everybody else is. And so I think the good news is that we're not going into the fall, and we got something with this where we've never gotten anything before. You know, I knew going in we wouldn't get everything we wanted, but I knew if we did. That's right. We get far more than we've ever gotten before.
And apparently, with your vote, you thought absolutely shouldn't have. We should have got more.
Yeah, my vote.
But
it is
good.
More, I think there is some good in it.
It could be worse.
But you voted against it because you wanted it to be better. But it was still good, right? Am I following that? It is complicated.
It is complicated. There's some good in it, and it's on.
We need the whiteboard out here.
Yeah. Get me a whiteboard. I'll draw up the plays that we ran. But what's good about it is the permitting reform, which does not include the transmission of permitting that the Green New Deal was pushing.
Now, so what is that? Explain that. I'm not following that.
Well, what?
Right, hang on. Let's break and come back. I'm
not too smart. You got a really dumb
explain. Yeah, explain the permitting because we need. I'm really looking for some positive here. So you say this is a positive. So let's talk about that when we come back with Gary Palmer when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast continues. Rick and Bubba.
This is the Rick and Bubba Show. Watch more at blazetv.com/Rick and Bubba. Rick and Bubba, Rick and Bubba.
All right, we're with Gary Palmer. He represents the state of Alabama, District 6. He's a representative in the House. And, of course, we just had the vote. On the debt relief and the ceiling and let's not default and all that, and it did pass. And Gary is telling us there are some good things in it, even though he voted no because he thought that it could have been better. And one of the things was the permitting, and you were going to explain that to us.
Yeah, we've had a huge problem with getting things done. It took 11 years to add a runway to the Atlanta airport. I've worked for two international engineering companies before I ran the think tank. And so I have a pretty good idea of how long it ought to take to get something done. And what this bill does is it limits the ability of outside groups to stop a project, but it also expedites the permitting process. Instead of it taking 7 or 8 years to get a permit, it shouldn't take more than 2 years, and that's right. With all your environmental impact studies and all of that. What the Democrats wanted, though, was they wanted to really apply this to the building of transmission lines because all this idea about renewables, you know, generating power with turbine farms and solar farms will require new transmission lines because nobody wants a turbine farm close to their home.
Right.
Nobody wants a solar.
Especially Eagles.
Close to their home.
Yeah.
And here's to get, I could really get off in the weeds with you about this, but if you took one next generation advanced nuclear facility, you could put it on 640 acres. It wouldn't be in your backyard, but it would only take 640 acres. That's one square mile. To get the same amount of power from a turbine facility would take 77,000 acres.
Right.
See, these kind of things that the green people never think through
and
never tell you.
The wind has to be blowing.
And the wind has to. It's
it ain't blowing. It ain't worth the metal it's made out of.
It's intermittent power.
Right.
But because it takes such a huge area, you don't have it located close to transmission lines. So they want to build a nationwide network of transmission lines. And
everybody loves those coming through their neighborhood.
You know, we're having a debate over the Lesser Prairie Chicken whether or not it should be on the endangered species list, and they've used that to stop.
What animal is that?
Lesser prairie chicken.
So it's not even an impressive prairie chicken.
It's not the greater.
It's a lesser prairie chicken.
Lesser prairie chicken.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're not doing counseling for them because they're not viewed as the greater prairie chicken.
Right, yeah, right, whatever. But I've lived my whole life without ever seeing one. I bet I can make it.
Yeah, I wouldn't know one if you walked in here.
Right.
Yeah. And
can you eat them?
It tastes like chicken.
Okay.
But
I bet they don't fly around windmills.
No.
But here's the thing to show you how these hypocritical these guys are. They've used that to stop pipelines.
Right.
They've used that to stop highway construction. But when I ask them, will you exempt them from protection to build your transmission lines, the answer was yes.
Of course it was.
They're going to build them anyway.
Of course it was.
So that's, again, back to the bill. That's one of the positive things that we got in there. This pipeline that Joe Manchin wanted, some people may look at that as a political concession, but it's really an important pipeline.
It kind of looks like one.
I know. and I'm sure they're dancing in the streets in West Virginia that Joe got his pipeline.
Right.
But in terms of cost of energy, fuel transmission, it's a big deal to get that pipeline. So there are some – that's one of the good things in there.
Gary, Congressman, let's just talk about spending in general. We're $32 trillion. In 10 years, we're going to be $51 trillion. The interest on that. Our GDP is about $23 trillion now. Is that fair? Is that a good guess?
It's probably a little bit more than that right now because we're at about 128% debt to GDP, somewhere in that range.
Which most people would say is where you don't want to be. We're kind of redlining it here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Is there any way we ever get out of this?
Yeah, I think so. But it's like a battlefield wound. You know, you've got that golden hour. And the first thing you got to do is you got to stop the hemorrhaging.
Right.
You got to stop the bleeding.
Agree.
And that's we get part of the way there with this.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the work requirements, reducing the state's waiver ability from 12% to 8%. That's a 33% reduction, and it's locked in. That's a positive.
But
and
let me
it gives us the opportunity to come back in other legislation to make this better. And if we had the House, the majority in the House and the Senate and the White House, I think this, even though I voted against it, I can still see a way to use this
mm-hmm.
to get us where we need to be in the next administration.
Well, it's hard to correct 100 years of mismanagement with one vote, okay? And I think we all understand that.
I hope everybody understands that.
But I guess what I'm trying to see on the bigger picture is, how do we ever fix this? It just looks like we're on a slippery slope that will never end. Because every time we hear that, and you're in the House, and if I'm not mistaken, I made, I think, a B in eighth grade civics. Every spending bill starts in the House.
That's
Republicans
correct.
Control mm-hmm. the House. Can't we just cut the money off on this stuff?
Well, some of you can, but again, Let me just start where I think.
Right. I mean, am I wrong? Could, because we can't spend more than we bring in unless you guys okay it.
Yeah. We're not going to get there without some reduction in spending.
Right.
But you're not going to get there without some increase in revenues. And let me give you an example. The whole basis argument that the Biden administration is making for the 87,000 additional IRS agents.
Right.
Is that we have in their
a lot of people are not paying their taxes. That's the only option you can come from, right?
Well, they're saying that the tax gap is somewhere between $550 and $600 billion a year. That means that is taxes that should have been collected but weren't. And I had a discussion with, and this was 4 or 5 years ago, about, well, why is that? Is it fraud? And the response was, well, some of it is. Most of it is the complexity of the tax code.
Yeah, it's just confusion.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So if the problem is complexity, the solution's not audits. The solution's a simpler tax.
Right. That's right.
Tax code. So let's say my solution would be a flat tax.
Right.
No, we love that idea, and it's so simple and it solves the problem. It seems so simplistic,
but it takes away some of your colleagues' ability to buy votes.
That's right.
Well, but let me
so they're not going to ever
if you eliminate
it.
let's say the tax gap is $600 billion and you reduce that to $500 billion. I mean, to you reduce it to $100 billion. That means you got $500 billion a year more coming in,
right.
and that's a flat number. It'll go up, but let's just use a flat number. In our 10-year window, that's $5 trillion plus interest because you're not having to borrow that money. We're sending out over $250 billion a year in improper payments. Let's say we reduce that to $50 billion. That's $2 trillion
right.
over 10 years
right.
plus interest. So now we're talking $7 trillion that helps us reduce this. Now the key here is don't spend it.
Right.
Use it for debt reduction.
Which never happens.
Well, it could happen, and yeah. you know, you have to come to a point where as
somebody's got to lead.
Well,
somebody's
Henry Kissinger.
You got to make hard decisions, and you guys, I know you have to deal with, hey, we have to have that, but to regular old Walmart folks like we are, it you know, we have to live in a budget. We can't figure out why Congress can't.
Well, my favorite Henry Kissinger quote was, there's nothing clears the mind quite so well as the absence of alternatives.
No, right.
That's what we're headed toward.
Well, and you said this for years, that we do not have a problem with revenue. We have a problem with the management of the revenue. And one of those things is the overcomplicated tax code.
Absolutely.
Because look how much inefficiency it's led to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're sending out payments we don't even owe to people. And then and most of it's because of the complexity of the tax code. And people, every time we've talked about this on the show, but you've supported it, what I think they miss about a flat tax, because they've been wrongly, they've let the rich be demonized, and fair share, which never is defined, mm-hmm. it's just a great slogan. If you go to a flat tax and you cut down all these deductions and you simplify it, then everybody's paying, nobody gets around it, people are keeping more of their money while actually sending more revenue to the government. And so when you're sitting here and you're from Calhoun County, Alabama, with a degree in common sense, you go, how can anybody be against this? It accomplishes everything we all want.
Yeah.
But well, who loses in that, Rick?
Well, that I can't politicize that.
That is special interest groups that I can, groups that I can buy votes with.
Right? Yeah. Corporate accountants and people like that. And I've even said, look, if corporate America wants to continue to have this stupid tax code, knock yourself out. But for the individual, let's go to a flat tax.
Right.
They can't afford high-powered accountants and people like that to do their taxes.
You know, that's the thing, and Rick was talking about, we always hear about fair share and all that. We all want to pay our fair share. I just don't want to pay eight other people's fair share in the meantime. And I want a strong defense. I just want to buy a Raptor myself, especially since I don't get to fly it. But when you hear that Amazon has not paid a dollar in tax because of loopholes that have been put in by the Congress, it just doesn't seem that there's a problem with that when they are, you know, posting billions and billions of dollars in profit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not demonizing the rich. Good for them. He had a great idea at work. But I just feel like that they ought to be paying like I do.
Well, again, if you eliminate the complexity.
That's right. Simplify it.
Let me give you an example of this on what's happening in pharmaceuticals.
All right, let's come back and talk about that, because I want to hear this.
Deep dive.
Because that's one that everybody's seeing right now. They're like, well, look, what in the world happened during this pandemic?
Yeah.
We'll come back more with Representative Gary Palmer when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, continues. So let's talk about Patriot Mobile. It's one of the things we talk about all the time. Some of us feel helpless. You're like, I don't like my money going to organizations that go out and vilify the things that I hold dear. They vilify the country. They vilify my moral worldview, my biblical worldview. Well, and you say, but I don't have any choice. And a lot of times, sadly, we don't. But when it comes to your Wi-Fi and your cell service, you actually have a choice. The big mobile companies out there, you know, Patriot Mobile is the only American Christian conservative wireless provider that is available, and they have dependable nationwide coverage, because Bubba, you and I have said this. I don't think we should be guilted into a product that's inferior, and we're not. Patriot Mobile says we're not inferior. As a matter of fact, if you think we are, we'll refund you and you can get out. It's the same nationwide coverage that all three major networks have. You get the best possible service in your area without all of the wokeness and the politics that go with some of the companies that you really don't want to send your money to. So you switch to Patriot Mobile. You're sending a message about what you support, free speech, religious freedom, freedom, sanctity of life, Second Amendment, military veterans, first responders. It's a 100% U.S.-based customer service team, and making the switch is really, really easy. Keep your phone, keep your number too if you want to. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Rick Bubba. That's patriotmobile.com/Rick Bubba. You do have a choice. Call 878-PATRIOT. Gary Palmer is our guest on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. As we took the quick break there, Gary, you were saying people like Bubba talking about these giant organizations, because of the complexity of the tax code, get around this. And you said the pharmaceutical companies, let's talk about what just happened with them.
Yeah. In the prior to 1990s, I think it's 1998, Puerto Rico was one of the leading places in the world for pharmaceutical manufacturing, even more bigger than any of the other 50 states. The territory of Puerto Rico had more pharmaceutical manufacturing than anywhere else in the country. In 1998, I think it was, the Clinton administration rescinded a provision in the tax code that made the corporate income tax on these companies prohibitive, to the point that companies were literally buying foreign pharmaceutical companies so that they could have their offices located. One of them was a pharmaceutical company from Chicago that bought a pharmaceutical organization in Ireland, and so they located their office there, and then they were under the Irish tax code. So instead of paying the 35% U.S. corporate income tax, they were paying 12.5%. So what I tell people about money and how it impacts decision-making is that money's like water. It will always seek the path of least resistance.
Yeah, right.
And when you make an investment, you've got a risk factor. And when you add onerous taxes to that risk factor, you drive down the ability to get capital into a marketplace. I know this is
nerdy. And that's nerdy jobs and other things, too.
It impacts
right. Equipment.
There was a massive exodus of pharmaceutical companies out of Puerto Rico. It sent Puerto Rico into a depression. We need to reevaluate that. We need to reevaluate the regulations that we're putting these companies under and how long they can hold their patents so that we can get manufacturing back here for a national security issue. For one thing, we found out under COVID what a mess that was when we couldn't get essential supplies.
So are you saying let them hold the patents longer so they can make that investment back or shorter?
I think, in my opinion, that we need to take a look at whether or not it needs to be longer, because there's literally billions of dollars that investors put into pharmaceutical companies hoping to get a hit on a key cancer drug or a heart disease drug or some other drug like that. And so much of that is lost. It's stranded cost. But when they finally hit on that drug, they've only got a short amount of time to recover that cost. That's one of the reasons why the drug costs are so high.
Right. Yeah, right.
What's happened in England, the course that they took, and this is what worries me about here, the direction we're going, is they have a national health system that decides how much they're going to spend on certain drugs. And there's 27 cancer drugs that are commonly available here that you can't get over there for treatment of stuff like breast cancer and prostate cancer. So we've got to have a serious reevaluation of the tax code top to bottom. I think a flat tax is the way to go. I've said that. If the corporate guys want to keep doing their loophole stuff, okay, but for the individuals. But we got to figure out a way to make it profitable to do business in this country. And that goes back to the regulatory reform, too. In his first year in office, Biden imposed another $200 billion in regulatory costs on the American consumer. By the end of his first term, and his only term, I hope, it will be $500 billion.
Wow.
Well, I think the tax rate for our corporate – and look, I understand any tax on a corporation gets passed on as cost to the product or service they sell. So we end up paying for it. But – we got to have some measuring stick. I think the rate is too high. we're the highest in the industrial world. I think where the key is all the loopholes to get out of paying that rate.
Right. Right.
And when we're talking about the Amazons and all that, that are making billions in profit, but they pay less than I do, or Rick and Bubba does as a corporation, just doesn't seem right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think we got to push the rate down and close the loopholes at the same time.
Well,
to make it fair.
Yeah. There's one other thing I want to talk about here about on the spending side. And the inflation, so-called Inflation Reduction Act, I called it the income the Income Reduction Act.
Right.
There was a provision in there to provide tax credits and subsidies that the Congressional Budget Office estimate was it would, over a 10-year period, be about $370-plus billion. Goldman Sachs came back and said, no, if every tax credit and every subsidy is taken advantage of, it'll be $1.2 trillion. My perspective is the CBO sandbagged us. So I'm bringing a bill that says that at the end of the third quarter of our fiscal year, if spending is going to exceed the CBO estimate by 3%, the CBO estimate is locked in. You can't spend a dime more.
All right. Make them accountable
right.
for
yeah.
the numbers
yeah.
they put out.
Because think about this. If I'm voting on a bill and somebody says, well, it's going to cost $300 billion over 10 years, that's what I'm approving. I'm not approving $1.2 trillion.
Right.
So I think it's Congress's responsibility to make sure that we stay within what the bill calls for. And if it needs to go over that, bring it back to Congress and force us to vote on it. And that's how you'll stop some of the runaway spending, because that's happening all the time.
Gary, I heard a guy, he was on one of the TV shows the other day, said, if you want to solve this spending problem, we need a law that says that, and I don't know what the numbers are, we'd have to work that out, that if the deficit to gross domestic product is over a certain percent, everyone sitting in Congress, senators and representatives, are ineligible to run for reelection. I think that would get the budget in order.
It wouldn't. And I'll tell you why.
They'd never vote. We'd never get that law passed, would we?
No, because you'd keep sending people up there that it'd take them 5 or 6 years to figure out where all the bathrooms are. And what's destroying the country is we don't have representative government. We've got government by administration. Administrative state.
Right.
Some people call it the deep state.
Well, they're taking Congress's power, in my opinion.
You're right, yeah.
But Congress has let them do that.
Well, and there's good news, believe it or not.
We need some, Gary. Throw it at us.
The Supreme Court in the last year in a ruling in West Virginia versus EPA struck down the EPA's position that basically they were making law themselves.
Yes.
Okay?
Especially them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's another case that will be decided by the end of this month that I think will be one of the game changers, and it has to do with who has the authority to make law, who has the authority to appropriate. I believe Supreme Court is going to resoundingly reject this premise that agencies can issue regulations and rules that are really lawmaking. It's going to force us to actually make the laws and do the appropriations. That'll come the end of this month. That is a step in the right direction to get us on the right track, because right now you've got people who have been working there 25, 30, 40 years. They look at me and they say, or they'd look at you, Rick, and say, I was here before he got here. I'll be here when he's gone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they do everything they can.
Y'all are just the Christmas help. Right? I didn't know what they used to call the president.
Well, when I first got there, I'd only been there about 3 months, and I was on the budget committee my first two terms, and I wanted to get improper payments into the budget and as a line item so that we would recognize it and start working to eliminate it. And so I sent my budget staffer down to the permanent budget committee. The committees have permanent staff, to tell them I want to do that. My guy came back, and I said, what did he say? And he said, he won't do it. I said, wait a minute. He said, he can't do it. Or he said he shouldn't do it, and he said, no, sir. He said he will not do it. And my staffer's name is Johnny. I said, Johnny, you go back down there and tell that guy that I said he didn't get elected. And Johnny's eyes got big. He said, do you want me to do that? And I said, I want you to do it now. I don't care if he's in a meeting. You walk in his office and you walk up to him and tell him I sent you there to tell him he did not get elected. And Johnny did. They put it in the budget. But I'm one of the few people that would have known to do that because I'd working with the think tank, I'd had some experience up
right,
there.
Yeah.
And I knew that this is the tail wagging the dog.
Amen.
This is what happens all the time.
Yep. Yeah. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation, wrap up this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, right after this. All right. So, you know, cold turkey is one way to stop bad habits. And I certainly like turkey on sandwiches. But
Sounded good.
Yeah. But there's a better way to break your bad habits. Now, we're not talking about some kind of weird thing that somebody's come up with. It is our new sponsor and a product called Fume. Okay. So, if you're having bad habits right now and you're like, I want to get off these bad habits, there's one way to do it and do it naturally with just plant oils and flavor, and you are going to love this product. Now, you know, unlike some of the electronic stuff out there, Fume is completely natural. It uses flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals and you know, it's all natural, delicious flavors. And, you know, really, if you think about it, some of us, like say, you know, like me, I struggle with biting my fingernails, whatever. Some of this is fidgeting. And Fume is great for those of us that fidget and have some bad habits that kind of help us replace the bad habit with something that's enjoyable, but it's all natural and it's not doing us any harm. It is a habit you're free to enjoy, and makes replacing the bad habits much more easy. Now, your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial, and it's designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers, you know, a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing, and maybe you're somebody struggles with anxiety, and also breaking that bad habit. The taste is great. You're going to love it. The flavor is more than you could ever imagine. It makes your breath feel fresh. You're going to love that. It's well weighted. It's balanced. Extremely fun to fidget with it. And of course, you're going to love how beautiful it is. It's made with real wood, and you feel kind of cool using it. So if you want to get yours right now, you just go to TryFume. Now, Fume is F-U-M. TryFume.com. Use our code RICKBUBBA. You'll save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. TryFume.com. Use the code RICKBUBBA and save an additional 10% off your order today. Head to TryFume.com/RICKBUBBA for that additional 10% off and start breaking those bad habits. Gary Palmer is our guest as we wrap up another edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. We've talked about the vote that just came in. The bill has passed. You, Gary Palmer, voted against it. Others have, and then others that we support and feel good about voted for it. You said it's not horrible, but it's not as good as it could have been. And that's where you kind of withheld the yes vote because you thought you were in a position to maybe get more than the Republicans got in the deal. But really, with only about, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left, I think a lot of us are confused by the debt. I think Americans have gotten to the point where they go, does this really matter? We seem to be functioning along. We all seem to get through our day. And this debt is something I can't even wrap my mind around. It looks like, you know, can't we just print more money? What harm does that do? Don't we owe some of this back to ourselves? Why don't we just forgive ourselves? I really believe there's a gross misunderstanding by just the American people on the debt and why it matters. And then if it matters, is there hope to fix it? You've already said yes to that. But why does this matter?
Well, to your point, most of the debt is intergovernmental debt. We owe it to ourselves, but that includes your Social Security, your Medicare, and Treasury bonds, things like that, that Americans hold. So I don't think anybody wants to just cut back on that.
Yeah, there's a misconception that China owes us and we ought to just wipe it off the books. But foreign debt, 25%, 28% maybe of the total?
I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but in China's case, it's less than $1 trillion.
Right.
I think the biggest holder of American debt is Japan. But here's why it matters. And again, it gets kind of in the weeds. It's the cost of capital. So when the government has this enormous amount of debt and they're raising interest, and you see what's happening right now, it makes buying a house more expensive. It makes buying a car more expensive. It also, and I, this is one of the points I made in our leadership meeting on Tuesday, is when people say, well, let's just let them default. Well, say that to this guy out there who's worked his whole life. He's invested in the stock market. He's drawing something from Social Security, and that's all he's got or all she's got. It matters to them. But think, too, about, like you guys, you're entrepreneurs. You started this program. You had to borrow some money, my guess is you had to borrow some money. If the cost of borrowing that money had been too high, you couldn't have started this program.
Right.
You would have had to wait it, and that wait might have caused you to lose interest.
Yeah, might have missed the window.
Yeah, you missed the window.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when you deal with these debt issues and why we have to address this, because it impacts people down to the lowest level, because you say, well, at the lowest level, somebody is going to borrow money to start a business. No, they might get hired by Rick and Bubba.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just getting it down, as they say in the country, putting hay down where the cows can get it. That's what this is. And I haven't even gotten into climate change. Maybe y'all will let me be an adjunct professor and come back and talk about that sometime.
Well, yeah. the climate change thing, you just gave an example already in this podcast about, you know, all these windmill farms versus, you know, nuclear power, 640 acres versus 77,000. When we watch the climate green movement, which we talked about today on the live show, all this means is it's going to cost you more money for everything you have. And right. the stuff you're going to be stuck with is not going to be as good as the stuff you had, while this science still remains a theory.
Well, and they're just moving the carbon footprint from the tailpipe to the smokestack, if you want to look at it that way, as far as these cars.
It's much bigger than this. This is, we call them watermelons. They're green on the outside but red on the inside. it is a philosophy of governing. It's about power. And I'm about to finish my 9th or 10th book on the science of all this stuff that I would love to come back and talk
about.
This, because especially to young people, so that they understand that climate change is real, but it's not an existential threat to the country.
Right.
China, those are existential threats to our future.
Yeah, and we're being told that, you know, you have to give up everything all because you're saving the planet. That's a tactic that's been used by socialists and by leftists for as long as I've been alive. We'll scare you into giving up freedoms, convincing you that you must give them up, or we're all going to die.
Or else.
Yeah, the same people that don't want to require people to work in order to get welfare benefits don't mind that there's 3 billion people in this world who use less electricity than we use for our refrigerators.
Right.
Okay? They're cooking their food indoors using cow dung and wood and food waste. And it's 500 million people died in over a short amount of time, according to the World Health Organization, because of it. I've literally asked some of my Democrat colleagues, do you just see those people as collateral damage? It's not about human flourishing. It's not about how you make the world better, more livable, more prosperous for people, so that they can enjoy some of the same benefits that you and I enjoy, that we take for granted.
Right.
Gary Palmer, thank you for being with us, and thank you for all the work you've done and continue to do, and giving us some silver lining, but also things we need to take very serious. And thanks to each and every one of you that have taken time to join us for this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast.